this session is to provide a project update about the research project on post-employment benefits and to ask for your comment on this research project. We think that we need to consider the result of the ongoing urgent consultation before we make recommendations to the ISB on what, if anything, the ISB should do next for this research project. Consequently, the ISB expects to decide the next steps, if any, after the agenda consultation. So we welcome your feedbacks and comments on the ongoing agenda consultation. In the meantime, we will continue our internal analysis and information gathering. So your comments in this session today will help our further analysis. Please let me explain the problem identified at the ISB meetings. The current IS-19 does not always provide relevant information when the pension risks do not fall solely on an entity or solely on employees, for example, when the benefits depend on the actual return on plan asset, but the entity also guarantees a minimum return. This is because we think the present value of the defined benefit obligation does not fully reflect the effect of the risks, whereas plan assets are measured at fair values, which fully reflect the effect of the risks. We think that this problem may mislead users of financial statements, and this problem has also resulted in current diversity in practice, as the Interpretation Committee has observed. Our staff papers presented include information about global trends in pensions in paper 4A, and an indication of potential models that might address the issue of hybrid funds in paper 4B, and information about the potential impact of the ongoing agenda consultation and other ISB projects, for example, the conceptual framework project and the insurance project, as described in paper 4C. Particularly in paper 4B, we listed possible models and provide our preliminary staff analysis. Overall, we note that any models that were consistent with the proposals in the conceptual framework project, for example, a customized fulfillment value, are not consistent with the current IS-19. So if we try to set a scope for their use, any scope is likely to be arbitrary and result in a significant boundary effect. If we do not set a scope, it will result in a fundamental amendment to requirement for measurement of defined benefit plans in IS-19. Practical models that were suggested in the past, for example, D9 approach or D9 model, also need a robust scope to be set for their use. The Interpretation Committee removed the project on contribution-based promises from its agenda when it realized the difficulty in setting an arbitrary scope for this issue. A new practical model is explained in paragraphs 40 to 43 of paper 4B. This would adjust estimation of ultimate cost to be reflected in measurement of defined benefit obligation. This practical model would probably not need an arbitrary scope and would fit within the current IS-19, we think. We would like to ask if you have any questions or comments on this project, and we'd like to ask if you have any comments on possible models and the staff with the preliminary analysis in paper 4B. In particular, do you support any specific practical solution, probably as a short term, or support conceptually sound approaches that would cover broader pension plans and the problems in IS-19. Thank you.
My first question would be, what is the problem that we are trying to fix in this one? When we responded to your agenda consultation, we had pensions very high on our list. And there were two reasons for that. A, we believe there is an impending problem, at least one, on how you account for defined benefit plans, which has nothing to do with what we are discussing now. It's basically targeted towards the discount rate, and we come to that tomorrow. The other issue is on hybrid plans, which seem to fall in here. When we put our consultation, our draft letter, on our website, we got tremendous support for that from virtually all the auditors and the preparers, but we got pushback from the Actuarial Assumption Association, because they said, A, what do you mean by new? These plans have existed for 30 years. B, we have found a practical solution. Thank you very much. Don't do anything.
Don't put us out of business.
Exactly. So if you ask me which is the model that probably is being applied, I would say probably denied by analogy. That's a matter of fact. And we hear that from other European constituents as well. Now, I note that the IFRIC has looked into this, and my reading between the lines is not quite consistent with where IAS 19 currently is. So from a standard set of perspective, I would certainly want a more robust discussion and a more robust solution that would deal with the things more appropriately. Well, then, is it a practical problem? Obviously not, because practice has found ways to deal with that. Is that consistent with IAS 19? Maybe not.
It's not what I hear in the Netherlands.
See, but this is what we hear from our actuaries. Ah. And that's the issue. That's why I'm raising the question.
Regulators have some work to do.
Yeah. So I certainly, and by laying out the models, I think you've neatly put the countries underneath for whom this might be a solution. And this seems to suggest to me that there is not a one-size-fits-all model, probably. So different approaches seem to fit different problems or different plans that exist. So the question is, if you want to embark on a project to deal with everything, that will probably be the next insurance project.
Stephen?
Which means soon as all.
Yeah.
Andreas?
Andreas?
You got to keep your machine down if you want the mic to pick you up.
Ah, sorry. I can understand the actuaries say that what is a problem to fix, but the D9 model deals with higher off promises using intrinsic value.
Yep.
Isn't the problem the underreporting of pension liabilities, and isn't it unsurprising that people don't want to change?
Yeah.
Which is why isn't it our responsibility to get to a faithful representation of the pension liability, which intrinsic value isn't?
I fully agree. I'm just reporting the feedback that we got. So our board has actually said keep it on the list, deal with the issue. But I mean, in terms of, is it a practical issue? Obviously not, because practice has found a way. That's the only thing that I could report. Is it something that's in line, conceptually speaking, with the standard? I have significant doubts.
Kim?
Thanks, Hans. Yeah, well, as Daryl knows, in South Africa, I guess the so-called practical solution has been people have been applying the proposed capped approach, which, yes, from an auditor perspective, the auditors have said, well, clearly not consistent, but the actuaries are adamant that because the standard requires you to use a discount rate being high quality corporate bonds. In South Africa, we don't have a deep market, so you're using government bonds. They're saying, well, in order to have consistency, if you're requiring me to discount the cash flows at the government bond rate, I have to assume that I've invested in government bonds. So we've got some plans whereby there's a guaranteed amount, however increases are subject to affordability, and maybe it's linked to inflation or whatever it might be, but subject to affordability. the dilemma that, to say, that has existed between the actuaries and the accountants and auditors is that you might be invested in equities yielding, you know, significant returns, which means that those increases are affordable. Yet if you project those increases forward and then you discount at this government bond rate, they believe that they are overstating the liability compared to the assets which they're holding, shows that there's a huge deficit. And they're saying, but there actually is no deficit because we've got the assets. So the way they've fixed it is they've said, to be internally consistent, I have to assume I've invested in government bonds, even though I haven't. And if I were to be investing in government bonds, I'd only be able to afford a much smaller increase. And therefore, those are my future benefits discounted at the government bond rate. And that's what they've been doing. Yet, as I say, auditors have been completely unhappy with that.
Wasn't that the original debate on IAS 19? Was the same debate, the matching? And it was disregarded. I mean, actuaries have argued this for decades. That's the way you should measure. But I mean, your actuaries could actually get a discount rate equal to their equity return if they wanted to, if they wanted to reduce the liabilities, instead of pretending you've got different assets from
well,
what you've got.
Yeah, but it's slightly different. From the original debate was about where the payoffs on the liability weren't correlated in any way with the payouts on the asset. What we're talking about here are cases where the benefits you paid depend in some way on the assets.
Correct. So because of this affordability, it's based on the assets. And so because the auditors have said, well, the standard is clear on the discount rate, they have said, well, in order to make this make sense, this is what they're doing. And what's very interesting in our jurisdiction, where the auditors have said, but that's not consistent with IAS 19, you must do it differently, the actuaries are qualifying their reports and are actually saying, in our professional view, this does not give a fair view. However, the auditors have required us to do it this way, but we believe it's not right, it doesn't reflect anything. So, yeah, I would say this capped approach certainly would bring the actuaries in line with... or rather would allow the actuaries to continue with their current practice.
Yukio.
Thank you. We appreciate the ISB staff did a very good job to sort out various pension schemes in different jurisdictions and identify different possible approaches in review of the accounting requirement. We support the ISB continue to undertake the research project on accounting requirement of post-employment benefit amid the situation where the hybrid pension schemes have become increasingly predominant. At the same time, we worry that making limited amendment to the current accounting model for the purpose of addressing the hybrid schemes would give rise to inconsistencies with the accounting requirement of conventional types of pension schemes. Therefore, we generally support the ISB take time to carry out a comprehensive review project considering both the conceptual argument as well as practical impact and acceptability of alternative ideas. Mm. Having said that, considering the significance of feedback already received so far from our stakeholders, we believe that it would be necessary for the ISB to review targeted areas such as accounting requirement of net interest on the defined benefit liability or asset, as well as non-recycling of OCI. In doing so, we encourage the ISB to consider the discussion of profit or loss and recycling of OCI within the conceptual framework project, as well as feedback received on 2015 agenda consultation. In addition, we suggest the ISB carry out the post-implementation review of IAS 19 as soon as possible so that the ISB understand the breadth of concerns on these areas.
I think our efforts to try to patch the model to address the new plans and the failure to do that either because of scoping considerations or just that the model doesn't work for those plans conceptually suggests that it's probably very necessary to try to start over and think about the model in its entirety. I think there's a lot of risk if you try to address the narrow scope plans that exist now that by the time you get done with that, there'll be some new plans, because this is a highly changing area of compensation that will not be well addressed by any patch you put on the current model. Let's think about what the problems with the current model are. I think one of the biggest challenges about the current model is we try to embed in that model asset returns with assets and liabilities and their returns on both sides all within one model and make it all work out economically. That's even more challenging than insurance, because at least in insurance, the assets are accounted for separately and the returns are the actual returns. And bringing that all together in one model, I think, is extremely challenging and causes users many headaches and try to understand the economics of those plans by all the netting that exists. So at first, I would at least think about if we started again, whether we have conceptual justification for netting the assets and liabilities and netting the benefit cost all together with all these moving parts, and ask that question by opening our minds a little bit. But more so, I think that we have to begin to think about whether we want to, how much and to what extent we want to be linking expected returns on assets to discount rates. Does that make some sense when the actual return on assets is going to be different than the expected returns inherent in a discount rate? And whether we really want to be moving to a discount rate that is simplistic as a high quality corporate discount rate or bond rate that just doesn't seem to reflect the economics well in these plans whatsoever. And I think that's the biggest challenge beyond the netting is what we do with returns and how we reflect them. And that is causes us to have to think, open up things much more broadly than the models that you have in paper 4C. And I would recommend starting from base concepts and try to be developing a model that works with the whole range of plans that we have now, recognizing that it's not going to work well for any of the new plans if we lock in where we are, but if we have more flexibility in either the in both the gross presentation versus net and how we handle differential returns on both sides, I think we could create a model that would be flexible enough to roll with plans as they change going forward.
Why would a gross presentation help?
If you pull the assets out, then you don't have to end up, you can end up getting reporting in the income statement of the actual return on those assets without having to then have the disconnect between the actual returns and what we're thinking about expected returns that for a portion of the cash flows affect the discount rate on the liability. That becomes too many moving parts from my point of view.
It will make pension accounting as simple as insurance accounting.
and if that's what we achieve, ouch.
The big problem is they're not your assets and liabilities. And that's why I'd have trouble with a gross up and direct crediting of the income through the profit and loss and, you know, the expense.
I didn't say that was conceptually the correct answer. I think we'd have to evaluate whether you have control over those assets or not. Yeah. But then if we don't have control over the assets, how do we do the reporting of the assets and liabilities that are presented net in the income statement? Could it be that it is, instead of net, that we do a linked presentation, that we separate them in some accounting that we can carry through? I don't know what the answers are, but I do know that the problems are is that we've netted things down way too far and connected things together that make it very problematic to reflect the economics.
Linda?
So I just want to make a few comments relative to the kind of state of play in Canada. We've done a fair amount of discussion with our stakeholders over the last year on pensions, simply because we're doing a strategic plan. We have a section in our own handbook that is the accounting for pension funds, so the fund reporting itself. But whenever you get into that conversation, stakeholders want to talk about accounting for their pensions, so it lends itself to having those discussions. So let me give you some perspective on that. We are seeing the emergence of some types of new types of plans, but I need to be clear here, that's mostly in the public sector, not the private sector. It wasn't clear from the things you cited in your papers whether you were making that distinction or not, so would mention that. I think that going forward, one of the things you're going to need to deal with is getting a nomenclature where we can all talk about, make sure we're all talking about the same things, because there's shared risk, target benefit plans, hybrid, like I've got a list of a bunch of different nomenclatures, and at some point we're going to have to figure out what to call these things, or we're going to be having a discussion like we did this morning down the road about pension plans. Too many words. So what we concluded from this is that we need to do some research. And when we talked about doing research with our stakeholders, this was the number one topic that came up in our outreach, is taking a look at pensions and what's happening and what are the new emerging plans. Most people said that the current guidance in IAS 19 is meeting their needs. I think there is an element of the fact that it's very complicated accounting and they don't really want to change it, so I think there would be a bias for them to say that it's meeting their needs, and I think that's natural human behavior. We do know that our PSAB, our board for the public sector, is starting a project on pensions, and so we'll be watching the data that they gather as we move along. We do expect in January to start gathering some data with regard to any new types of plans. With that in mind, we do know that defined benefit plans are still in play and will be in play for a long time. Some of the trends that we're seeing, employers are offering people incentives to move out of a DB plan into a DC plan. Some people are closing DB plans to new entrants, and they're you know, putting other plans in place. The other thing that's been happening in our jurisdiction is there's been a fair amount of litigation relative to, we actually do have plans with surplus and who owns the surplus. So employers are putting a lot of governance around the administration of pension plans, and they're very hesitant to make extensive changes to those plans. And from a regulatory perspective, our regulatory regime is complex because we have federal level regulation and provincial level regulation. And so that's also making the notion of what's happening with pension plans more complicated. The other thing in play in our jurisdiction was a lot of work recently around practice, where you saw the differential between the actual rate of return and then the projected rate of return, and there was a wide difference. And so practice has been working on narrowing that difference to give more realistic views of the obligation. The other thing that's happened in our jurisdiction is we had a lot, I noticed you mentioned a specialist in your data sheet. We had for a while, some months ago, actuaries out trying to market plans that say, here's a plan that behaves a certain way and we can get you defined contribution accounting for this type of plan. So we actually brought that to the attention of the Actuarial Standards Oversight Council, which happens to be chaired by Trish O'Malley. I left it in her hands, and it seems to have been taken care of. So, you know, our view is that we need to do more in terms of data gathering. We're happy to share that with you as we have it. It will be some months before we can do that. I noted with interest that you talked about once insurance is implemented, then the allays over complexity will be gone and everything can move forward. So, but that's a ways off, so I'm not sure we can rely on that for this project right now. So those are the views coming from us. We think the agenda consultation may shed some more light on this, but we definitely think that we need to do research, and we'll keep you posted on that.
Patrick.
Three remarks, if I may. The first one is I think the standard itself has triggered many changes because the plans were just unaffordable to start with. So people are playing with the standard in order to find a solution that minimizes the cost for the business. point one. Point two, in fact, that has produced as many categories or subcategories of plans as probably as businesses. And therefore, I subscribe to the view that it's pretty difficult to find a very clear solution at standard level. However, and you have all the nuances between a pure defined benefit and a pure defined contribution. Three, I think, sorry to say that, but we have to think a little bit as we are considering insurance, mm-hmm. where in fact the key question is a correlation between liabilities and assets. There is or there is not. If there is none, we have, you know, we have to take into account the features, because there is no obligation everywhere to have in the invested assets that are the counterpart of the liabilities. So we need to think about the liability in isolation in a way that is autonomous somehow. When there is a correlation, of course, then I think that not taking into account, I'm not saying netting, Tom, but not taking the two together and not being coherent in the treatment of liabilities with the treatment of assets, we would create mismatches, which is the risk we have in other cases like insurance. So I think for me the key criterion is probably, is there a correlation between liability and assets? If there is none, it's a one way. If there is one, then let's address it. And if it's a partial one, then you have probably to split.
Stephen?
I agree with what Patrick just said, that the key thing is the correlation between the assets and liabilities, and that affects the discount rate that you would want to apply. The only way to really solve this, as Tom said, is comprehensively, because the plans are so diverse that you need one overall measurement approach that takes into account the characteristics of the plan. But I think we can't wait for that to solve this particular problem. And I don't think we've been doing ourselves any favours in the last few years in just putting it off all the time. On Kim's actuaries versus auditors, I'm afraid, much as it pains me to say so, I think the actuaries are right in this case.
They'll love you for this.
And it comes down
as an ex-auditor, I subscribe.
And it comes down to the correlation. But they're wrong in the sense they've only got a partial solution, because what they're failing to do is to take into account the guarantees. And that's my big problem with the D9 solution, or indeed this capped return solution, because it then understates the liability. We go from overstatement to understatement, which is just as bad.
So, Steve, you said that we cannot wait for a complete overhaul. So what do we do in
the I don't think so, because if you start messing with the high-quality corporate bond discount rate, that's going to take a while to do, because we're going to have such an outcry. Because I can only imagine that whatever we do would increase the liability under a standard DB plan. I'd be very surprised if anything we tinkered with reduced the liability. So we're going to have a lot of difficulty changing basic DB accounting. So that's why I think the capped return approach, I think, is the right one, but it's got to be on a stochastic basis so that the cost of the guarantees is included. That's how I would solve that particular problem. Tom mentioned one other thing about separating the assets and liabilities. I don't think we should go there. I think that would also be in the too difficult to do. I don't disagree conceptually that if you control the assets, then they should be shown separately. But thinking of trying to apply IFRS 9 to those assets and then somehow account for the liabilities separately, and you know, we've got enough mess in OCI at the moment, which is going to have more mess there. So most people quite like IAS 19 and the disaggregation between service costs, the financing effect in the current period, and the remeasurements. I mean, these users really can work with it, and there's nothing fundamentally wrong with that. The problem is the measurement itself, not so much the presentation.
I just thought that even if we didn't present them separately as assets of the entity, which they may not be, depending on what the circumstances, and liability separately, that if you ended up with a link presentation, instead of netting it all down and have the assets presented, net of the liability, and then accounted for the assets as a stream to income and cash flows, without having it being netted off against the liability and the linkages as much, you'd have more capability of dealing with separate discount rates on the liabilities that would not reflect necessarily expected asset returns. You'd still be able to get actual asset returns to the extent there's linkage between the asset and the liability that have to be reflected in the discount rate, and guarantees would have to be either reflected in the cash flows on the liability and or the discount rate, not and, or the discount rate, but not both. And part of the problem is we're putting them in both, some of these things in both places. So if there's unexpected uncertainty in the cash flows from the asset side, in the liabilities cash flows, and the guarantee and the expectation of the cash flow payment on the guarantee and the cash flows, that frees up the discount rate not to have to deal with some of those issues, because you don't want to double count. And that could be a more simplistic solution that allows some freedom, as long as you don't then have to have the assets have the return that's expected in the reporting.
Now, I see what you're saying. Fortunately, under IFRS, we've already got rid of the expected return.
I didn't say that accounting for the expect, I understand, but you equated it.
Yeah, a different concept.
In your model, Tom, where would you put contributions to the fund and payout of pensions? Will you take all those through the company as well? So you're paying pensions out all the time, sometimes getting cash in, I think. So you're going to do all your investment income through the company, and all your increases in liability through the company, and then you've got payouts. And
no, I think the investments would go into the plan statements, but you'd reflect the outcomes of your what you have, the inflows related to that in one net asset number related to what's in the plan?
Increase in assets, increase in liabilities.
Kind of a claim on fund assets type of thing.
Yeah. Chris?
So we're coming from a slightly different perspective, because we really don't have too many of the new hybrid plans. So we're, most of our DB funds are in a runoff situation. But we do accept, obviously, that this is a very big key issue for many countries. So our perspective is, we think a lot of it comes down to problems with the fact that you've got a standard that says if you're not DC, then you're DB. So we think part of the issue will be trying to actually clarify what's a DC and what's a DB and what's in the middle. So we'd be encouraging looking for the solution to the middle bit as the interim solution, and not tampering too much with the true DB funds and letting those just continue to run off and not have to do anything different. So a couple of comments. We would certainly agree that going down a fair value route is completely impracticable. So we spent quite a bit of time in Australia looking at accounting from the fund's perspective itself. And we did look very closely at fair value, and where we came out was that the moral hazard of actually trying to work it through, because as the employer you're actually setting the salaries of the employees, it's just impossible to come up with a fair value solution. But we were actually very attracted to the insurance proposals here, and we thought that they would have a lot of merit, because that would at least allow you to reflect the risk appropriately in the cash flows, whether it's your own specific risks or not. So that's where we'd be suggesting that you'd spend some time.
Any other comments? Okay, any other questions to raise?
Huh? Actually, thank you very much. I think it was very helpful to understand that there are diversified views in the practice and diversified situations in each jurisdiction. So I believe that we will continue our analysis, taking your points as well as comments to our data consultation. So I have no comments so far, and I'm happy to continue.
Okay, thank you very much.